We are now 2 weeks away from this year's most anticipated film awards, the 77th annual Oscar ceremonies presented by the National Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And we're in the midst of our own annual Oscar ritual, as I'm joined by our own film music buff, Andy Trudeau, to talk about the nominations this year for Best Original Score. Welcome back, Andy. Happy 10th anniversary.
Thanks, Sheila. You know, our dirty little secret has been that for the last 10 years, we have talked about 50 pieces of contemporary orchestral music, the writing in which sometimes is very advanced. And it's just wonderfully amazing to me that this all falls under the heading of entertainment.
And people are really interested, I think.
I think.
This year's nominees are Finding Neverland by Jan A.P. Kaczmarek, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban by John Williams, Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events by Thomas Newman, The Passion of the Christ by John Debney, and The Village by James Newton Howard. Last week we heard music by Kaczmarek and Newman. This week you've got Howard and Williams.
This is Howard's sixth Oscar nomination. What's most interesting to me about this score is the fact that it represents his fourth collaboration with the same director, M. Night Shyamalan. They previously worked together on Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs. When a composer and a director work together for a while, there's a bond of trust that develops between the two that I think gets them started more quickly. They instantly are on the same page. And on the other hand, I think there's times the director will allow the composer a little more latitude than he might allow for a stranger. The Village on the surface is a psychological tale, so we're going to hear a lot of eerie, spooky music. But at the core of it, Howard found something he called the most gratifying emotional aspect, which is a love story. And he assigns this sensation, this emotion, if you will, to a solo violin, which on the soundtrack is played by the violin virtuoso Hilary Hahn. Now, let's start with a cue that sets up our supernatural surroundings and also, I think, shows the power of this emotional aspect, this violin love story that's at the heart of the movie. I call this pointillistic effects. He's got a foundation of a drone underneath, and he's just spotting in eerie little effects, music sometimes, sound effects sometimes. Now we have a crescendo. Listen to the calming effect when the violin comes in. Notice how everything is settled down?
Yeah, and it's not what I expected from the violin.
It's a very simple accompaniment underneath that's reinforcing her sound. The motif itself isn't necessarily melodic, but it's calmed everything. There's tranquility here.
Yeah.
The director called Hahn the musical star of this movie, and he actually called the composer and said, how do we acknowledge this? And that's why when people watch the film, the first credit they'll see at the end is a credit for Hilary Hahn, who's acknowledged as the featured violinist. The score is mostly atmospheric, but there are a couple of themes, and not surprisingly, one of the more beautiful ones is given to the violin. Simple accompaniment. We've got keyboard and little electronics behind it.
Is that the high sound I'm hearing
Yes.
behind it?
Now there's a second part to the theme. Now, throughout this score, the violin never really battles with the other music. It's always a presence that just suddenly changes the whole texture of everything. And I think it's a real clue to understanding the score and understanding what the composer was trying to do. You're going to hear it very clearly in the next cue, which starts with a very dramatic, loud, clomping rhythm evoking primitive ritual. And then when the violin slides in, you're going to hear how the texture and the mood and everything changes. This is the kind of cues they often have to write. This is controlled chaos. But notice the sound effects. He's using rattles, horns, I think things evoking primitive ritual.
Yeah.
He's got electronics in there. He's got orchestral brass smearing all over the place.
And it's building.
Now the violin's going to slide in. Notice how the texture has changed.
Completely.
It's like oil on a choppy sea. The accompaniment is a little more complicated underneath it, but the overall effect is still the same. And I think this is really central to what Howard is doing in this score.
I'm talking with Andy Trudeau about music by James Newton Howard from The Village. It's one of five soundtracks nominated this year in the Oscar category of Best Original Score. Also returning to the list is a composer who's now been represented for 9 of the 10 years we've been talking about film music. That would be John Williams for Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
What a record. He's been nominated 43 times. He's won 4 Oscars for original score, 1 Oscar for an adaptation. He has scored how many of these multi-part serials? Star Wars, Indiana Jones. He even did the first 2 Jaws pictures. This is his 3rd Harry Potter score, although I have to say the 2nd used all his material, but it was prepared and organized by another composer. He was just so busy that year that he couldn't spend the time on the film, but it was still all his stuff.
I can't imagine how someone can pick up from another composer like that.
Well, you're given a menu of themes, you know the orchestral sound, and if you're a good utilitarian composer, you'll be able to do that. It happens quite a lot. People who have been following, especially the film music part of this saga of Harry Potter, have understood there are certain themes that were certainly introduced in the first film. They're not as important in this 3rd installment, and I think it's partly because the storylines have changed. They've probably gone in directions no one had anticipated, and the composer has to adapt to that. Mm-hmm. He's introduced some new themes in this score, and one of them, which is called a close cousin of Hedwig's theme, which was a theme that was very prominent in the first score, is utilized here. One of the first times we hear it, it's a choral version set to words taken from Shakespeare. This theme is woven throughout the texture of this score, and it'll appear throughout it in different ways. One thing I like is he's added, you would think this would be a no-brainer, given even though Harry Potter set in modern times, there is something medieval about the whole concept.
Definitely.
And this is really the first score that introduces this medieval sound a little more dramatically. Here's that Shakespearean tune, if you will, in an instrumental setting. There it is.
Oh, that sounds even more medieval.
Yes.
Or Renaissance, maybe.
Typical film music, they went out and got an early music group to play these sections. So they got very authentic early music sounds here.
With authentic instruments?
Yes.
Huh.
Something you can do in film music. I like a lot of things about Williams. One of them is that he's enough of a classical composer that he can take devices that are more common in classical music and make them work in a film score, in a dramatic context. Another of the new themes that Williams introduces in this installment is a tender and sad one for Harry's memory of his lost parents. And again, this is the confidence of a composer. He's got the full resources of a symphony orchestra at his command, and he understands that to sell this point, he needs the poignancy of a solo flute.
It just reaches into your heart, doesn't it?
It's pure melody working at this point. Now, one thing about fantasy films, they're a little like cartoons in that they can dramatically and stylistically change character very abruptly. We've been hearing, if you will, a medieval flavor to a lot of the characterization in this film, but this is a fantasy film. So suddenly, I think as Monty Python would say, we're going to hear something completely different.
Oh, it does sound like a cartoon.
Yes, this is probably chase music of another sort. You've got jazz, and if you're a fan of the old Star Wars, remember the cantina music?
Mm-hmm.
Take a listen. This is everything but the kitchen sink music. For the final cue from this score, I wanted to pick something that had two elements to it. First of all, I love it. It's rare in a film that a composer can put something in your face, because usually the music has to be in the background. And this cue opens with a timpani flourish that is just wonderful. And then it's a sign of Williams's skill as a composer. How many flying scenes has he must have scored over the years in the various films that he's done? And this is more flying music, but he finds a way to make it fresh.
That's fun.
And now we're flying. No matter how many times he's done this, it still sounds, you still get that sense of wonder from this experience.
But this is very different from other flying that he's written?
It's not a cookie cutter, but it's clearly of the same family.
I've been talking with Andy Trudeau about music by John Williams, whose soundtrack for Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban is one of five nominated this year for a Best Original Score Oscar. Before that, we heard selections from The Village by James Newton Howard. There's only one left, Andy.
And it's a first Oscar nomination for a composer who managed to handle the transition from writing the score to Bruce Almighty to the film that's nominated, The Passion of the Christ. The composer is John Debney.
And you will give us your pick for the Oscar. Andy Trudeau talks to us every year about this time, about film music. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Sheila.
You can hear more music from this year's nominees, as well as samples from Andy's 10 favorite scores of all time, at our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Sheila Kast.